Well, unless U.S. national security is rescued from the hands of those who fashioned the Bush Doctrine, our democracy and moral standing in the world will erode further, and our national security will be placed in even greater jeopardy than it is now. At least that's the warning from my guest this morning, Ian Shapiro. He sounds that warning in his new book entitled Containment, Rebuilding a Strategy Against Global Terror. He's the Sterling Professor of Political Science and Henry R. Luce Director of the Macmillan Center for International and Area Studies at Yale University. His many books include The Flight from Reality in the Human Sciences and Death by a Thousand Cuts, The Fight Over Taxing Inherited Wealth. Morning, Ian.
I'm delighted to be with you.
And actually, you were here in Salt Lake City yesterday giving a speech before some folks at the Alta Club. What was that event?
It was about the book, and I was very pleased to be there, and I enjoyed it very much, and I'm delighted to be able to follow up with you today.
So tell me about your assessment of where we are, just in terms of the issue of the war on terror. Is there a war on terror, or is that just a politically expedient thing for the president to pick up?
Well, many people have commented that the idea of a war on terror doesn't really make sense in the sense that terror is a technique. I think that's right, but the point that's less often made, in some ways is more important, is that to the extent we declare a war on terror, we're committing ourselves to a condition of permanent war, because after all, there's no adversary on the other side who will sign an armistice and surrender. And what politician is going to take the risk of declaring the war on terror to have been won maybe a week before the next plane flies into the next building? We all saw how badly burned President Bush was by his mission accomplished banner on the aircraft carrier at what turned out to be the end of the phony war in Iraq. So I think to the degree we get ourselves into the mindset of thinking about a war on terror, we're really committing ourselves to a condition of permanent war, and that's not good for our country or good for our world.
Sounds like Orwell's 1984, too, doesn't it?
Yeah, in some respects it does.
But also it sounds a little bit like the Cold War. Wasn't that a war where there was never really a thought of when you declared victory or not?
Well, I think that that was partly what prompted George Kennan to develop the original idea of containment, which I adapt and modify and build on in thinking about the Cold War world in my book, Containment, Rebuilding a Strategy Against Global Terror. You know, Kennan's view was that it will be impossible for America to completely dominate the global security environment. Therefore, rather than trying to do that and failing, what we should do is work toward a world which nobody can control, nobody can dominate, no single power. And with respect to the Soviets, that meant hemming them in. He thought their system was fundamentally dysfunctional and would eventually collapse, as it did. But hemming them in and reducing the threat that they compose to us, as distinct from trying to engage in what Eisenhower and John Foster Dulles and others called rollback, which was, I guess, the 1950s version of regime change. And just as I think that Kennan was right to think that rollback was a mistake in the 50s and that his policies made more sense, so today I argue in my book that engaging in gratuitous regime change around the world to try and democratize it, while the goal is noble and the people pursuing it are well-intentioned, I think it's deeply misguided as a way of going about things.
Mm-hmm. So invading Arab countries as a means of rollback or regime change, you're saying, is not going to make me any safer here in Salt Lake City?
It's going to make us less safe, because it's going to... if we attack countries that do not threaten our vital interests, as was the case in Iraq, and with which and for which we don't have any international legitimacy or support, which was also the case in the 2003 invasion of Iraq, all we really do is help. First of all, we make the weak state problem in the world worse. You know, however many weak states there were in the world before we invaded Iraq, there's one more now. And this has now become a magnet for terrorists and a haven for terrorists, which it wasn't previously. And then we also hand propaganda victories to the Osama bin Ladens of this world and help them recruit followers, because however well-intentioned we are, in wanting to spread democracy through the Middle East, our actions are perceived as imperialistic by the people on the ground there. And so they're then easily recruited to terrorist causes.
So the notion that we can somehow, well, get back to, say, Afghanistan, was that a righteous use of American power?
Yes, it was. I think that we went about Afghanistan substantially in the right way with I think what we made one mistake. But we demanded that through international institutions that bin Laden be turned over. And when the Taliban regime refused to do that, we engaged in the righteous use of force. And it was perceived to be legitimate across the world, including most of the Middle East, precisely because we went through the United Nations and got international legitimation for what we were doing. There was a path not taken in Afghanistan, which is we could have just gone in and gone after the camps and devoted all the resources that we are now wasting in Iraq to actually getting the job done there without actually bumping off the Taliban regime. We could have just ignored them in Kabul, and we wouldn't then be saddled with the rebuilding rebuilding Afghanistan as a viable democracy that we now have and are failing at.
In fact, Afghanistan seems to be spinning out of control. Its opium production, I think, is more than it was before we invaded. And there's a lot of the countryside outside of Kabul that nobody but the warlords are in charge of.
Yeah, and you know, unfortunately, it's a byproduct of our having decided to do it on the cheap, because I think the reason we engaged in regime change in Afghanistan was that the administration wanted to have the Northern Alliance as part of the effort. But, of course, the Northern Alliance is an insurgent group that wanted to overthrow the Taliban. And so once we were working with them, it was inevitable that there was going to be regime change in Afghanistan. We couldn't treat it as essentially a police action where we would just ignore the government of the day and pursue our own security interests. Of course, had we done it on our own, it would have been much more costly to us. We would have had to have more American boots on the ground and so forth if we hadn't had those Northern Alliance fighters. On the other hand, it would have still have been a lot less costly than what we're doing now in Iraq, with no good results.
12 minutes before 10 o'clock, and we are talking with Ian Shapiro, Sterling Professor of Political Science, Henry R. Luce, Director of the Macmillan Center for International and Area Studies at Yale University. He was speaking at the Alta Club last night about his new book, Containment, Rebuilding a Strategy Against Global Terror. And if you've just tuned in, you're listening to Midday Utah on KPCW Park City, KCPW Salt Lake City. So, are we in danger of basically losing two wars here?
I think we're in serious danger of that. I think that well, the situations in Afghanistan and in Iraq are very different. But the problem in Iraq is we have now largely become bystanders, but unfortunately we're not very out of the conflict in what is a civil war in that country. And most civil wars are ended not by negotiations, but when either one side wins or they fight to a standstill and then have some kind of partition. And that's what Iraq is heading for. And our capacity to influence that result is negligible, I think, at this point.
I'm hearing, though, that it's not just, the ethnic thing, that we also had a situation here where Sudan emptied his prisons as we invaded that country. And besides the ethnic violence that's going on, we've got a whole bunch of other people out there that are just creating violence for the sake of violence.
You're dead right. And it's not just Sudan. The Egyptians are doing it too. A lot of the foreign fighters that are coming from Egypt essentially have a one-way ticket out of Egyptian prisons. And if they try to go back into Egypt, they're either arrested or killed. So, it's a little like the way Castro took opportunistic advantage of the Carter administration. Remember when he emptied his prisons into when Carter showed himself to be open to an amnesty open to receiving them. But Iraq is a magnet for foreign fighters, partly because some of these regimes see this as an opportunity to unload their most unsavory people.
So what should be our strategy then in Iraq? How do we disengage if that's what the goal needs to be?
We have to start planning a containment strategy for post-occupation Iraq. And I think that has three main elements.
Iran or Iraq?
Iraq. We also have to contain Iran. I'll get to that in a second. But to contain Iraq, we need three main policies. First is we have to set a date to leave and leave. Until we do that, nobody will trust our bona fides, and they will continue to see us as imperialists. Second, we have to put resolution of the Israel-Palestine conflict back to the center of our agenda, because there's no other issue that unites all our adversaries more. And third, we have, as the Baker Commission noted, we have to have cooperation with Syria and Iran. They both have interests in stabilizing the region, and Iran has many common interests with us. They have a common interest with us in not seeing a return of the Taliban to power in Afghanistan. They have a common interest with us in the territorial integrity of Iraq. If it breaks up, they'll have huge problems with their own Kurdish populations, not to mention a refugee crisis that will ensue. And, of course, they are a status quo power in the region and have been for a long time. They haven't attacked anyone since the 18th century, and they don't have territorial claims on anyone. So they have many common interests with us. That doesn't mean we don't have to contain Iran as well. They are developing nuclear weapons, and we will have to contain them. But just as we were able to have a strategic opening to China and have that help us containing the Soviet Union in the Cold War, that didn't mean we didn't also have to contain China. So, you know, we have partial common interests and partial conflicting interests with a regime like Iran, and we have to work with them where we have common interests and contain them where we have conflicting interests.
Okay, but what would that look like on the ground? Would that mean actually withdrawing all U.S. troops and just letting the Iraqis duke it out?
I think that we're going to end up doing that regardless, because American support for this war has evaporated in just the way it evaporated for the Vietnam War. And whether it's this administration or the next, I think it's unimaginable that we're going to end up staying in Iraq. So, you know, there are no good choices, and it's a humanitarian catastrophe in the making, whatever we do. And unfortunately, we bear considerable responsibility for it.
So we're back to the pottery store analogy. If you break it, you own it?
Well, yeah, if you break it, you own it, and you're responsible for fixing it, but we can't fix it. You know, I think it's going to go down as one of the most ill-conceived foreign policy ventures this country has ever engaged in.
Then the containment strategy against worldwide terrorism, whatever that is, that would seem to me to be pretty elusive. We don't have an evil empire in
exactly.
The Soviet...
Exactly, and there isn't one size fits all. You have to define it contextually. But I think it means two things that are different from in the Cold War. One, as Colonel Nunez and others have argued, it means creating regional alliances with functioning states that want to see stability and limit the export of terror into their own countries. So Nunez thinks we need NATO-style organizations on every continent, and I think he's right about that. But then secondly, we have to work with international institutions so that if you get a situation such as Al-Qaeda in Afghanistan, that we can get the imprimatur of the United Nations to put together an international coalition to go after them. I think the textbook of success here is George Bush, the first George Bush's coalition to go into Iraq in 1991, which was a classic containment exercise, widely supported across the world and legitimated by the UN.
In your book, you list five national security imperatives. Tell me what they are.
Well, the most important one, of course, is to protect America as a democracy into the future. But in the service of that, I think we need to do a number of things. The most important, of course, is to use the instruments of containment as I've been describing them here, to contain terror as and where it arises, working with institutional, working with international institutions and regional alliances. We also have to invest in human intelligence and enhance homeland security. We have to gear military alliances and collective defense agreements first to our survival as a democracy and then to the defense of other democracies. And we should support democratic oppositions against dictatorships around the world, but that does not mean we should engage in the gratuitous regime change we've pursued in Iraq. And then finally, we should sow the seeds of an environment friendly to democracy by promoting economic development in poor countries.
Now, does that mean, then, that we're in this for the long haul?
Yeah, we have to be in this for the long haul because terrorism, you know, terrorism and has been around for thousands of years, and it's never going to go away completely. So saying, you know, we're going to end terrorism is a bit like saying we're going to end crime. Well, it's just not going to happen.
Is it also the case that as the last superpower left standing, we're just the easiest, highest profile target?
Well, we are, and we've made that problem worse. You know, I haven't said this yet, but one of the most appalling costs of our action in Iraq has been the massive display of American weakness on the world stage. The fact that we cannot prevail there, that we have can't quell a country of 25 million. You know, when we first went in there, people in Damascus and Tehran were panicked that they would be next. You know, it's not remotely plausible that we could attack Iran now with a country of 75 million people if we can't prevail in a country of 25 million which had been decimated by 13 years of successful containment. So, yes, we're the biggest kid on the block, but we are pretty badly bloodied by this, and our power and prestige is nowhere near what it was in 2001 around the world.
Could it also say that in this world that we're still fighting the last war with our military? Dick Cheney thought that we could build a lightning strike fast force that could go in and pretty much do anything. Now we're sitting there having to go, you know, house to house, just like we were doing the rice paddies in Vietnam.
Yeah, well, Cheney was talking about winning wars, and he was right in many respects, and the initial military campaign in Iraq was a stunning success. But that doesn't win the peace, you know, and we had no plan. They had no idea about how to go ahead and win the peace, and there was no plan for it, and I think there's still no plan for it. We keep hearing that there's no plan B if the surge fails, and I think that's right. There is no plan B, and the surge is failing.
Name of the book is Containment, Rebuilding a Strategy Against Global Terror. How were you received last night at the Alta Club in this, the reddest of red states?
It was a very interesting discussion because, you know, my book is hard on the Bush administration, but in many ways it's even harder on the Democrats for failing to provide any leadership, for failing to be a loyal opposition, and for failing to articulate alternatives. I think that the Bush doctrine as it's played out is appalling to many conservatives because it's such a departure from traditional Republican principles. You don't have to go any further than George W. Bush's 2000 campaign to find him arguing that we should never get involved in unnecessary foreign adventures. We should never take on military enterprises unless the objectives are clear and the exit strategies are manifest, that we should not engage in nation building, and that we should not try to impose our view of democracy on peoples around the world. That's what he ran in 2000. So I think many Republicans and many conservatives are extremely disappointed in this administration.
Out of time?
For pursuing these policies.
Name of the book is Containment, Rebuilding a Strategy Against Global Terror. Its author is Ian Shapiro. Ian, I appreciate your time.
Thanks so much for having me on.